sung by Edward Meeker, Edison Records. Casey was baseball mad, had the fever and had it bad, just to root for the hometown crew, every Sioux, Casey Blue. On a Saturday, her young beau called to see if she'd like to go to see a show, but Miss Kate said no. I'll tell you what you can do. Take me out to the ball game, take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. Well, it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Hi, this is Zeke. This is Baseball Memories. And that was the original Take Me Out to the Ball Game by Edward Meeker in 1908. An instant hit in 1908 and still running strong after 100 years, Albert von Tilzer's song quickly became a classic. Tilzer wrote the music, Jack Norwith wrote the words.
This is Zeke, Baseball Memories. We're talking with Pepper Pear Davis. Pepper, I think I heard you singing in the background, didn't I?
You sure did. Well, you heard me giving it a fling anyway.
Yeah. Somehow I knew you would, just knowing you, after talking on the phone for so long. Let me just do a little intro and then we'll get to it. LaVon Pepper Pear Davis played in the AAGPBL, the All-American Girls Baseball League, from 1944 to 1954. She was inducted.
That sounds better now.
Excuse
me, your volume is still low for me.
She was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame with the other All-Stars of the League. She wrote a book, Dirt in the Skirt, that tells her story of a woman's life in the game. Pepper was a major consultant to the movie A League of Their Own, where they used her league song and the phrase, there's no crying in baseball. She also had a knack for running into famous celebrities, a lot of them. Welcome, Pepper.
Hey, how's it going there, Clip?
Just call me Zeke. It's my show name.
You know what? I didn't know that, but I kept wanting to call you Zeke. Not Zeke from Cabin Creek, right?
No. I don't even know what that is.
That's Jerry West.
I don't even know who that is.
That was Jerry West's nickname, Zeke from Cabin Creek. The Great Laker.
Roger, did you know that?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that one I did.
You'll have to tell me later.
Well, you're from New York. I'll excuse you.
Oh, thank you.
Wow.
Hey, you got to remember one thing. I'm a Californian.
Oh, no kidding. If I may ask, Pepper, where in California? Because I am presently, right now, in Southgate, California, right near Downey. I'm a SoCal kid all my life. Well, for 42 years.
Well, me too. I'm a SoCal gal, born and raised in West Los Angeles when it was called Sawtelle. But I'm in the valley now. I'm in Van Nuys. But you're down there in Downey. My brother, who is the great inspiration for me, lives in La Mirada, just around the corner there.
Most definitely. Sawtelle, I know exactly where that is. And, of course, Van Nuys as well. That's a treat. It's amazing that we are basically, what, maybe 30 miles apart. And then if we take Zeke into it, we're 3,000 miles apart.
Oh, he's a kind of a distant guy, huh?
Yes.
He's a long-distance guy.
Most
definitely.
But
from what I can tell, he's pretty darn good at his job.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, we haven't even started.
Well, I got to get you buttered up here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm trying to do that to you, too. So, let's start with way back. Pepper grew up during the 1930s Depression, playing softball three nights a week, bringing home gas money and food from the sponsors. Because baseball became a way of her life, something similar to breathing. What do you think?
That's right. It was without baseball, you know. It, to me, it's something you had to do, like breathing. But incidentally, I want you to know this is my birthday month, so. I'm going to be 87 in May, so that was a long time ago.
Wow.
But I kind of found a way to beat it. If I stand on my head and look backwards, I'm only 78.
Yeah.
So therefore, I don't even, like, it used to be I had red hair and blue eyes, and now I got red eyes and blue hair. But outside of that, you know, I'm pretty close, except I don't even buy green bananas anymore, Cliff, or Zeke. But that was a long time ago, yes, and baseball was a way of life for me and actually for my family. My dad hauled us around in a little, 27 Ford truck, and my brother, who was 18 months older than me, and the guy that was responsible for me being a great ball player, if I can use that term, because he was the kind of brother that took me everywhere with him, and still does. And so when they would go, you know, I was like 8 or 9 years old, and they would, in order to get my brother, they'd have to take me when they choose up sides, you know, when we were playing the sandlot stuff. Well, I like to kid him and say, yeah, but you know what, bro, about a year later, in order to get me, they had to take you. So I kind of progressed a little bit, but I had the opportunity. And softball at that time was the only thing there was for a woman or a girl that had an athletic talent, unless you had money, because all tennis, golf, all those things, unless you had money or a sponsor, that was too expensive. And I was growing up during the Depression when things were really tough. I like to say we didn't know it because you can't really miss what you haven't got, and we were happy. We had maybe had one pair of shoes with cardboard in them, and you kept the top shined. But I know a lot of nights my mom and pop went to bed and wondered how they were going to feed us the next day, but they always managed. They were wonderful.
I can't even imagine. Were you also working?
My brother had 2 paper routes. I later on I was working, but not when I was 9 years old. I was working. I was playing softball, and I played for one little grocery store on Santa Monica Boulevard. In Sawtell, right around, actually, Westgate Avenue and Sawtell Boulevard. And it was called Fattinger's Groceries. And they sponsored our team. And if we won, we got to go back to that grocery store, and we got a brown paper bag. And whatever we could get in that paper bag, we could take home.
Yeah, that's good incentive.
Well, I learned real early that if you want to bring home the bacon, you got to win.
Now, at age 19, before you joined the league, you were working a defense plant and going to UCLA part-time, but you dropped everything to make sports history, right?
That's right. I was playing on 3 different softball teams. I was building P-38s in the San Fernando Valley at Lockheed, and we had a softball coach named Bill Allington. He was nicknamed the Silver Fox, and he played professional baseball, and he was a scout for Wrigley, and he had this meeting, and, for those that didn't see the movie, there's a great deal of truth in the movie. President Roosevelt and Branch Rickey, they were like Judge Landis. They were afraid that the baseball just might have to be called off for a couple of years because of the war. The manpower shortage was extremely bad because the guys were all signing up and joining up. And even your small towns lost all their minor league baseball. And you had, you know, guys like the one-armed fellow that played center field and a midget that played for Cleveland, and there were all kinds of stuff going on in baseball, but they were actually afraid that the 1943 and 1944 baseball season might not be able to open because they would just not have the manpower. So President Roosevelt asked if Bill Wrigley could do something about that. And incidentally, in the movie, the Harvey Bar, Mr. Harvey, that was Mr. P.K. Wrigley, Wrigley's
right.
chewing gum.
Right,
they changed names and composited things because Penny had to get a war and 12
you
years of baseball and 10 teams into 2 hours.
And you're talking about Penny the director, right?
Penny Marshall, yeah.
Yeah,
a very
yeah.
good friend of mine. And she had to get that all into 2 hours. So, and also, that way they saved money. See, if they'd have called that catcher Pepper, they'd have had to pay me a lot more money than they paid me. So, actually, in real life, I'm the catcher that did not drop the ball, okay?
That's right.
In that final series that you saw in the movie, the final game against Rockford, I was actually the catcher for the Racine Belles. And they got 15 hits and no runs. And I got 7 runners at the plate and 3 of them on squeeze plays. And
wow.
We got 5 hits and 1 run, and we won it 1-0 in 15 innings. And both Branch Rickey and Judge Landis and Max Carey, the great Max Carey, were all at that ball game, and they said it was the greatest game played they'd ever seen by man or woman.
Now, were you as mouthy as that catcher in the movie?
Oh, I was mouthier. I was mouthier.
What did you used to do and say?
Oh, well, you mean stuff you can say on the air?
I guess not. We'll have to bleep it.
Well, I know we had this big tall pitcher from Oklahoma called Bean Dreisinger, and God bless her, she's up there on Cloud 9 now on my heavenly team. And she was 6'2" and probably weighed about 30 pounds, you know. She had this straight overhand fastball. And it got up there pretty good. And but when she got wild, she would get wild in the dirt. And she was from Oklahoma and had never been around a big crowd. So she had to get used to the crowds cheering and yelling. So this one night she starts off and she's throwing the ball in the dirt. And our manager's going out there and talking to her. You know, she'd lost her timing. She's hanging on to the ball too long and throwing it in the dirt. And our manager, he goes out there and he talks to her, and he just made it worse because Beansy was very shy. So a catcher has to be sort of a psychiatrist as well as a catcher and has to treat pitchers different ways according to their personalities. So I goes out there to the mound, and I said, Beansy. And, like, I'm 5'3". Well, actually, I was 5'4½". And she's 6'3". So you get the mental picture.
Wow.
I'm looking up at her. She's looking down at me with her hat pulled over her eyes. And I said, Beansy, I'm going to tell you something. If you throw one more ball in the dirt, I'm going to come back out here, and I'm going to pee all over your left leg. Well, Beansy, she started to choke and turned her back and started laughing, and you could see her shoulders hunching up and down, you know? And she turned around and started firing strikes. And she forgot all about her troubles. But she relaxed.
Yeah, that's probably the best thing you could do.
Well, I think sometimes in the majors they overcoach, you know? And I think when something goes wrong with your hitting or your performance or your throwing, or it's basically always timing. And timing is getting too tense, thinking too hard, just not doing what comes naturally. So anyway.
You went on to play 10 years as a pro, and you played on 5 championship teams in your career. Let's talk a little bit about what it's like to play ball back then.
Well, you know what? It was tough. And I'm sorry, but these guys today, hey, they couldn't do it. They couldn't handle it. And you know what? A lot of them that I met agreed with me 100%. Like, here lately we've lost some really great players and close friends of mine, Duke Snyder, for one, that we just lost to Duke. And I know Duke very well, and Joe DiMaggio. And when we talked with those guys, they said, you know, they couldn't have handled it. Zeke, we played from 110 to 130 ball games in a 4-month season. Now, that doesn't count spring training or postseason. We played every night in the week and doubleheaders on Sundays and holidays. And we traveled. No days off for traveling. And we traveled on like a 1934 bus, and it, with a governor on it, that you couldn't go more than 40 miles an hour because it was the war. So if we played a Saturday night ball game, say, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, get on the bus, and we had to, at all times, we had to appear in public, skirts, blouses, dresses, could not wear jeans, shorts, or slacks, not at any point in time. Had to go to that charm school. Great deal of truth in the movie. But if we get back, we get on that bus, I'll tell you, we invented layered clothing because we'd have the shorts and the T-shirts underneath the skirts and the blouses. We get on that bus at midnight, after give us an hour to eat after the ball game. We would travel all night long on that bus, and if we'd be lucky, if it didn't break down, we had to push it. But then if somebody had an emergency, of course there was no bathroom or no electricity or anything like that on the bus, but there were a lot of big, tall cornfields, so you'd stop and take a little jaunt out to the cornfield and hope you didn't run into any critters. And you kind of had to watch out for poison ivy, too.
Oh, man.
But you'd get back on that bus, and we would maybe then get into Rockford, Illinois, between 10 and 11 in the morning. Probably don't have time to go to the hotel because the rooms probably wouldn't have been ready anyway. Get into uniform on the bus, go right to the ballpark, and play a Sunday afternoon doubleheader. Now, that was routine.
Wow.
That was routine. So, you know, a little plane flight here and there where you couldn't stretch your legs. We would have loved that.
Were you able to sleep?
Well, if you can, you know, there was no air conditioning. If you got the window open, you probably couldn't get it closed. Most of the time on the buses, the seats did not recline. So, no, you really weren't. You basically napped. And maybe you sang all night. Sometimes you played cards. Some of them played cards. Some of them knitted. And some of them tried to sleep. But you had only one seat. I mean, the bus was full. So there was no place to lay down, as well as the seats did not recline.
What about eating?
Well, you ate before you left, and you ate after the ball game, or if you had time. I was never one that could eat before a ball game. I was used to eating that steak at midnight with a couple of cold beers, if we were allowed to by the chaperone, if we were in a place where we couldn't be seen.
Right.
But you could take crackers or something like that on the bus. That was about it.
How much did you have to spend for that steak and beer?
Actually, that was one of the good things. We got a big $2.25 a day meal money.
And that was big back then, right?
And that was a lot of money. A lot of the girls, including the Canadians, who were very thrifty, God bless them. I'm not knocking them. I love the Canadians. They were great gals. They were just totally different than us, and they had a lot to learn, and a hard way to learn it. But they lived on their meal money and sent their checks home, and we were paid very good money for the 40s. We were paid like $50 a week was a minimum, and $110 a week was the maximum, and that was a lot of money in the 40s. You know, 35 cents an hour was good money in the 40s.
Yeah. Now, coming from the West Coast, how'd you get along with the other players?
No, we didn't. Actually, we did, but we didn't. On our team, the first team I was on was Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we had 5 Californians and 6 Canadians. Now, that was quite a combination, I got to tell you. That was, they thought that we were cocky and rude, and we thought they were stuck up and dressed like Queen Victoria. So, but on the ball field, we got along. And when we got to know one another, that was totally different. Then we got along just great because it was all about the game. And for us, it was all about playing the game and keeping baseball alive while our loved ones were over there fighting and dying. And that was, we had brothers and we had fathers and we had sisters. We all had people over there. That one scene in the movie where the gals handed the telegram that her husband was killed in Europe, well, that actually happened. That happened right down on the ball field, and we were playing them, and her name was McGuire, Nikki McGuire. And actually, she was Stillwell's mom.
Oh.
There was Stillwell. And there was a Stillwell. That's very true. Of course, that wasn't the name, but anyway, she was handed that telegram right down on the field. And she opened it up and read it, and she hung her head down. And he said, "We'll take you home now," our manager. And she said, "No." And she handed it back, and she said, "I'll play. Please don't announce it." And she never missed a ball game. And when I was telling the writers, Babalu Mandel and Lowell Thomas, when I was telling them about these things and how we played with injuries, I had the day before the 1948 season opened, I was catching batting practice, and I broke my index finger on my right hand in three different places. A foul tip came off the bat wrong, and it got me.
Ouch.
And Johnny Rawlins is the next big leaguer, played for Cleveland. He took me to the doctors, and they put one of these big bird cages on there. It looked like a tomato cage. They call it a birdcage splint. And we get back to the hotel, and Johnny says to me, Johnny always talked out of the side of his mouth like he had something sour, and he did. He had an ulcer. We found out later. He says to me, "Pepper, can you play with that thing?" I said, "Well, not with this birdcage on here." He said, "Oh, I can fix that." And he pulls it off, takes a popsicle stick, breaks it in half, takes half of it to the side of my hand and the other half to the bottom of my finger, and I caught the season. As a result of that, I now have a finger that can point in four different ways at the same time.
Oh. Wow.
And it's an important finger.
Yeah, really. Today's players would go on the DL,
but,
right?
Yeah, we played with injuries. I played with an infected strawberry. You can imagine hitting the dirt in the skirt, you know, that hurt.
I've never tried it.
Well, once you got a strawberry, if you got a bad one, you're gonna carry it probably for a long time, because the minute you hit the dirt, you rip it open again. And we had satin shorts on. We wore satin shorts under our uniforms. Now, at one point in time in the beginning, they had a sliding pad. But it hung down to your knee from the inside of the shorts. It wasn't fastened anywhere, and when you hit the dirt, it would just ride up. It did you no good, no good at all, and it looked horrible. So we just all took those off. It was useless. So that meant when you hit the dirt wrong, and most of the time you could take it on your leg and you don't get the strawberry, but when you've got to go into that base all out and try to avoid that tag and hit that dirt full length, you're going to pick up a strawberry sometimes, and especially when there's no protection there. The guys have the pads, and they get them.
All right.
So, like I say.
Let's go on to you were traded three times, and each time the new team went on to win the championship. You were consistently high in RBIs and consistently low in strikeouts, proving yourself as a clutch hitter when the chips were down. Now, each time you went to each team, it was devastating, right? And then you turned out good.
Oh, yeah, because I couldn't, you know, you felt like you'd been betrayed. And they had a different viewpoint, which, I don't know, it seems like maybe, you know, the major leagues could learn from it. The league was, as a whole, owned totally by one person, and it was a nonprofit organization, and that was P.K. Wrigley. Well, they wanted to keep the teams equal so that the hometowns, all the fans had a chance to see some winning baseball. So if one team was a little bit too strong, they would then trade a strong player for a weak player or for a couple of weak players. And I seemed to get caught in that a lot. And as you say, I was traded three different times. And each time I was traded, the team I went to, we won the championship. And I like to think I had something to do with that.
One year
I was up to bat 397 times and struck out six.
Wow.
And drove in 70 runs. So I know my pitchers like to see me come to bat when there were ducks on the pond.
That's
when I wound up.
Yeah.
That's when I wound up. I was not a home run hitter. I was a line drive hitter, a contact hitter. I had the ability to take two strikes and foul off pitches till I got the one I wanted or till I got a walk. And I had a great eye. And incidentally, while I'm pounding myself on the back relentlessly here, I had a strong arm, too. Max Carey, who still holds some major league records, and actually Max held the stolen base record up till Maury Wills broke it, and he still holds some. He called me Cannon. So there you go.
Yeah. You met Roger, and you talked about his wife, Margarita. She wants to know, do you have any relatives playing ball, pro ball right now?
No, I don't. And I don't. Nobody in my family is actually wound up playing ball. And my son, my youngest son, I have two boys and a girl. And my youngest son, we called him Bopper because my husband's name was Bob and my name was Pepper. So we named him Bopper because he could hit right-handed and left-handed by the time he was 2 years old. Won a big plastic bat, you know, and he could throw. But unfortunately, he had allergies, and he had asthma from an early age on. He could not get the early training that he needed. So he basically just has wound up being a great sports fan, and he participates, but he did not have the ability. My older son, Bobby, had a lot of athletic ability and was in the little leagues as a catcher. And unfortunately, I don't know how it is today, but in my day, the coach's son was also a catcher. Well, my Bobby was a much better catcher, but he didn't get to play because the coach's son got to play. And I went down there and I tried to talk to him. I said, "Look, I can help you out here." You came up. They wouldn't even talk to me. I told them, "I played baseball. I played professional baseball. I was taught by Hall of Famers." And they looked me right back and said, "You mean softball?"
Yeah.
And I said, "No, I mean baseball." And they would look me right back and say, "You mean softball?" And then dismiss me, so to speak. So actually, Bobby then just got discouraged and wound up being a surfer. And he's now up in Colorado in the snow country, and he's a great skier. So he had the ability, but things didn't work out.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, we recently had on Justine Siegel, who pitched in spring training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's there will be a gal make the majors, one of these days. I can tell you that a couple of us were offered contracts in the minor leagues, but we were making more money where we were. Plus, we felt like it was a publicity stunt. But I tell you what, Zeke, we were darn good ball players. What they couldn't show you in the movie was we lasted for 12 long years, and we extended to 10 full teams. And in 1948, Chicago had a team, and the home games were televised, and we drew over 1 million people through the gates.
Wow.
At big league prices. We outdrew professional football. In fact, a lot of the pro football players were moonlighting as umpires in our league because professional football wasn't making it.
Right.
We were the second, outside of Major League Baseball, we were the second successful professional sports team, period.
That's impressive.
But history has completely ignored that till the movie.
Yeah. What, now, let's go back to if a female plays one day, what position do you think a woman could make it
at? Oh, it's got to be pitcher.
Yeah.
It's got to be pitcher. And basically, maybe designated hitter, if she's real good. You see, while we had a chance to grow with the game. We went from playing, they called it baseball all along, and we played baseball rules. But when we started, we were pitching underhand with a much larger ball and shorter bases. But we were playing baseball rules, lead off, hold the runner on, the whole bit. Well, every year, the ball got smaller, the bases went back, the mound went back, went to sidearm, to overhand, and wound up playing pure baseball. Now, we were in our formative years, and we grew with it. Mm-hmm. But you can't take a girl or a guy from softball and put him into the majors playing hardball.
Right.
They can't make that jump.
Now let me for the folks, let me just go over the ball size in 43 was 12 inches, and by the 1954 mid-season it was 9 inches.
That's right.
The length of base paths in 43 was 65 feet, and by 54 it was 85 feet. The pitching distance in 43 was 40 feet, and by 1954 it was 60 feet.
That's
and
right.
The pitching style started off underhand, just you know like softball. And then by, 48, they went overhand? Yeah.
By 48, we were throwing completely overhand. It went from underhand to sidearm to overhand. Because as the mound went back, you could not throw effectively underhand. So you went to sidearm. And as it still kept going back, you couldn't throw effectively sidearm, basically, so you went to overhand. Well, see, we grew every year step by step.
Yeah.
By the time we got to 53, when you brought a rookie in from softball, which was our only farm system, and that was one mistake that the league made. Not at any point in time did they ever set up a really farm system. They gave the money away. We built a lot of schools, a lot of athletic compounds, a lot of things for churches and for our towns, which was great. But they should have put a little pocket aside and developed a farm system, because by the time we got to 54, as you just noted, we're playing practically totally baseball. You can't make that jump overnight from softball.
Oh, really?
So,
yeah.
So the girls would get hurt, they'd get married, or they'd find the guy they wanted to marry, like I did, and I had some competition. So I after my 10 years. And won the pennant in 52 and played in 53, I decided to take 54 off. And I was planning 1953 off. And I was planning on coming back and I was going to pitch the rest of the time because I had pitched 3 ball games and won them all. I had a 1.2 ERA. I pitched the first game of a doubleheader and caught the second game, and we won them both.
Nice.
But the guy I wanted to marry, I had some competition, and I was tired, so I stayed home that year. And if I had it to do all over again, that 1954 year, I would have gone because there was no indication. The league just suddenly folded. All of a sudden, 3 teams lost their backing, and they just folded.
Yeah.
And to me, that was like cutting off my breathing.
Now, what were the chaperones like, and how did you treat them?
Well, the chaperones were a varied breed, and we had some great ones, and we had some ones that, like anything else, just weren't that great at the job. But we had some really great. We had Dottie Hunter, who was a Canadian. She came in as a first baseman and then became a chaperone. And we called her Dorf from the North. And she was such a great gal. She had the understanding. They had to be both your mother and also your discipliner, you know, because you're dealing, the coaches were all these hard-nosed baseball guys, tobacco spitting. You didn't want to sit in the seat right behind them on the bus because if you could open those windows, you're going to get a face full of tobacco juice. And that wasn't very nice. But they were all ex-big leaguers and hard-talking, you know. So you needed that buffer. And the chaperone, she was like your mother, but she was also like your school teacher and also your disciplinarian and your watchdog.
Well,
we really did have all those tough rules, and we really did go to charm school.
Well, you did give them a tough time, though, didn't you? You got in some trouble, didn't you?
Well, yeah, a little bit, maybe. Me and my friend, in the movie, Madonna plays a character that is called All the Way May. Well, that was built on my very close friend, Faye Dancer. She and I both went to Brockton Avenue School and then to Emerson Junior High and then to Uni High. Only I was a year older. Well, we called her All the Way Faye. Well, of course, they changed it for the movie so they don't have to pay royalties and made it All the Way May. Well, she and I were buddies. And, yeah, but you know what? Compared to today, it was such harmless stuff, Zeke. It really was. I mean, the worst of it was maybe, we had this way of initiating the rookies in Grand Rapids, Michigan, when I was on there, and we had this little gal in named Mo Trezza, who was from Brooklyn. And Mo called everybody Mo, so, of course, we nicknamed her Mo. So after the ball game, we'd take her in Racine, and I was talking to you about this the other day. There was a cemetery in Racine. And this was written up in Ripley's Believe It or Not column. On the outskirts of town in Racine, there was this big cemetery. And as you turned into that cemetery at night, when the lights hit the side of this hill that had like 1,000 tombstones on it, a great big huge side of a hill, right in the center of that it appeared. One of those tombstones would radiate and light up and appear to rise right up in the air. And when you got past this real brief point, it would completely disappear. And they never could really identify what tombstone it was because it would completely disappear. Well, that was our way of initiating the rookies. We take Mo out there, and I'm driving my Chevy. I think it was a 37 Chevy. Four on the floor. And we get out there and we turn in, and it really was a scary sight. This tombstone appears to rise right up out of the ground and rise right up in the air on the side of this hill. And she's like sort of dumbfounded. And we said, "Now come on, Mo, you got to get out to really get a good look at it." So she gets out, and of course we take off. We leave Mo in the cemetery at midnight. Well, I'm still in second gear. And we hear pound, pound, pound. Mo passed us. She passed us, boy. We knew darn good and well Mo was going to make it. She could run like heck.
Would you play any pranks like that?
Well, we did that all the time, of course. You know, you had to do something. Bus trips were, 11, 12-hour bus trips. When we had... all of these superstitions, and I really define you to find me any really good, dedicated athlete that doesn't have superstitions. Now, I know you don't necessarily really believe that maybe that's true, but it is a diversion, and it is a way to get your mind off of things. And we had a couple of, when we passed a graveyard, you crossed your fingers and you said, "Oh, there goes a boneyard." All right. When we saw white horses, that meant you're going to get a base hit. If you licked your two fingers, smacked them in the middle of your palm, and hit it with your fist, you were going to get a base hit. some days we were doing that a lot. We wore ourselves out getting base hits on the bus. But the only thing you could do was play cards or sing, and you couldn't. There were no battery radios, no plug-ins, nothing like that. So those of us that could sing a little bit used to sing. Well, of course, I wrote songs all my life, so I used to, that they would say sing this. And you knew all the songs by heart because you had to. You didn't have this box to carry around that played them for you.
Yeah.
And you also didn't have the potty. It wasn't the world's easiest life, but we loved it.
Yeah, it was worth it.
And you know what? We loved our fans. When the ball game was over, win or lose, we signed autographs until they turned the lights out. And many times, like in Fort Wayne, we didn't live that far from the ballpark. Fans would walk home from the ballpark with us and sing and talk. You were very cognizant of the fact that you were there to make those people happy and that they were paying the bill and that you played as hard as you could play for them. And we've lost that today.
Yeah. There was, on your site, you've got a lot of pictures, and I saw one picture of a fine they put on you. I think it was for $50. But it doesn't say what you did.
You mean when I knocked the umpire down?
Is that what you did?
Yeah. Lou Remkes. Lou Remkes was a professional football player, and he was moonlighting as an umpire in our league. And, in fact, that's on my Ted. That's what they got on the back of my Ted Williams baseball card, is that fact. And I slid into second base, and my buddy Alma Ziegler with California was playing second base, and she gave me the old phantom tag, and she missed me. The ball beat me, but she missed me by a foot. And he was on the wrong side of the play. Or he should have been on the inside of the play. He was not. He was standing way on the outside of the play. And I jumped up, and he called me out. And she missed me by a foot, but she gave me the old phantom tag and made it look good. I jumped up and whirled around. I said, "What?" And he's down there calling me out with his thumb up, you know, bent over. And my fist caught him right under the jaw.
Uh-oh.
And down goes this 6'7", 280-pound linebacker. And he's laying down there on the ground. And he said, "Pepper, I know you didn't mean to do that, but I got to throw you out." Well, Lou's gone now, but he was a Hall of Famer. I want to tell Lou that I'm sorry, Lou. You were a great football player, but you had a glass chin. So anyway, I got fined a whole big $50 for that. And that was a lot of dough. That was almost a week's salary, you know?
Yeah. Before we go on, I've had a request from the chat room to sing your song.
What?
That they want you to sing your song.
The one in the All American?
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I got to take off and take me out to the ball game. You know, I sang that for you too.
Yeah. Okay.
I've had an upper respiratory infection, so I will sing it, but you have to forgive my gravel, dirty voice.
Okay.
Normally, I'm still doing pretty good in that line, but I have a resident frog in my throat, which is upper respiratory. So I got to get rid of him one of these days. But I'll go through a few lines of it.
Okay.
Batter up, hear that call. The time has come for one and all to play ball. For we're the members of the All-American League. We come from cities near and far. We've got Canadians, Irish, London, Swedes, we're all for one. We're one for all. We're all Americans. Each girl stands her head so proudly high. Her motto, do or die. She's not the one to use or need an alibi. Our chaperones are not too soft. They're not too tough. Our managers are on the ball. We've got a president who really knows his stuff. We're all for one. We're one for all. We're all American. Yes! That's it.
That's great. I'm actually going to clip
sorry,
that out.
I apologize for my voice. It's not at its best.
Oh, it sounded fine. Matter of fact, we're going to clip it out, and we're going to use it some of our shows that we're going to do in the future.
Well, let me with apologies to Harry Carey, and to the fine rendition that you played to start it, and to the real take me out to the ball game. In today's world, I think we all know baseball has changed. And in some instances, it's good, but some instances, it's not so good. And the drug issue has been such a huge problem. And as I told you, the millions of dollars they get, and then they can't play if they got a hangnail, right? So I kind of rearranged Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And I kind of sing it this way. Take me out of the ball game. I don't think I can play. I've got a headache and a hangnail, too. What's more, I think I'm coming down with the flu, so please take me out of the ball game. If we don't win, it's a shame. But I'll still get my 1, 2, 3 million or more at the old ball game. And then I tell the guys, hey, if the shoe fits, wear it. Now, that's not for the majority of ball players today. Those of us four know about it. And I was considering adding one more line, and I hope this doesn't get you cut off of air. I was considering adding, we're at the end there where I say, I'll still get my 1, 2, 3 million or more at the old ball game. I'd really like to suit up, but they won't let me shoot up at the old ball game.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. I have to jump in on this one. My wife is here. She's the one that asked you to sing the song, and that's a double treat. Oh, my goodness. And then
it's margarita time.
It's margarita. It's tiempo de margarita. Yes, it is margarita time, but I have to tell you, the chat room, they're getting a kick out of it, too. My goodness, that was a treat. I'm sorry, I just had to jump in on that one. Oh, my goodness, that was great.
Well, I hope it doesn't get you thrown off the air, huh?
Oh, no, not at all, not at all. First of all, Pear, there's no FCC here, and two, nope, everyone who comes to listen wants to listen to you.
Actually, Roger.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'll tell you what, you know, I played over 1,000 ball games, and I played 10 years, and that's the reason my book took me 50 years to write it. That's the reason it's 50 chapters. It's just, there's so many things that happened. Things like when I played for Grand Rapids, Gerald Ford was a councilman then, and he used to come to the ball games. And I used to say he used to walk up the steps and fall down them, you know. Just kidding me. I've met 3 ex-presidents, you know, Reagan, Ford, and, the Democrat that was just president, you know, the guy with the zipper problem. Clinton. And he's a great guy and a handsome man. And, I've met so many famous ball players and been so lucky to count them as my friends, guys like Joe DiMaggio. And actually, Marilyn Monroe was graduated in my high school class. And Linda Darnell, Mickey Rooney, they were in my high school class at uni. And when I played softball, there were 2 softball fields out of Fairfax and Hollywood. And one was right on Hollywood Boulevard next to Grauman's Chinese. And all the movie stars would come to those games. And, I mean, guys like Robert Taylor, Tyrone Power, Clark Gable, Carol Lombard, Jimmy Durante. And all my life I've been sort of bumped into and surrounded by famous people. And, like, you know, ball player, all the great ball players, it's been such a privilege to know so many of them. And met Mickey Mantle. Friends, great friends with Joe DiMaggio. And yet, but I never mentioned Marilyn Monroe's name because I was told from the very beginning, don't mention her name, even though I went to school with her.
Roger, but, at this point, is there anything you want to ask or comment about?
Well, definitely. There are a few comments I would like to make. Pepper, I agree with you 100%. I never had the chance to play the ball that you did. I played varsity high school baseball in a very small school where I think they needed bodies. So I was the 9th pitcher on an 8-man pitching staff. So I lucked out, and I played ball after high school throughout the leagues in here in Southern California. I could mention street names, which you would remember, Hoover, Vermont, Manchester, all those. I played in all those parks, and even near where you mentioned
a
while ago.
I played in some of those, yeah.
Oh, now that I think about it, there are some parks that have been there for a while. I may have played a few baseball games on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays that you may have played on, and I never would have thought that. Wow.
Did you ever play at the Veterans Home? They call it Jackie Robinson Stadium now.
That's very familiar because I know they've changed some names right now. Is that one by Roosevelt?
No, it's off of Wilshire Boulevard.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. You played. Oh, my goodness. I know exactly.
Yeah, I played softball there.
I played by the airport, Pepper. I played high school ball over there by LAX where the airplanes are flying right over you. It was like, wow, it was unreal. But anyway, if I get a chance to speak with you again, Pepper, I would love to do so. But I agree with you. Even though I never made it to the major leagues or much less the very, very low minors, I do not believe the modern-day ball players could hold a candle to the players of even 30 years ago, much less 50 or 70, or even the women's league. They couldn't do it.
Because they're not conditioned to do it. And you know what? They keep saying, well, look at how the stats are now. Well, if you had given the guys in that day the equipment and all of the stuff that they have now, they would have done far better.
Well, Pepper.
You know, when they're talking about, you know, hitting these giant home runs and all that.
Well,
you know, I had the very great distinction of just being lucky. I had two of the greatest sports figures, actually, of the United States as my managers. One of them, of course, was Tom Hanks portrayed, they called him Jimmy Dugan in the movie.
Yes.
That was the very great Jimmy Fox, Double X, and he was my manager. And then when I was playing in the off season in 1945, I'd come home and play softball, and in the off season, I played for Jim Thorpe, America's great Olympic Games hero, and he was my manager.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, those are just names that...
You don't get too much more history in sports history or too much more greater players than those two guys. And I just happened to be in the right place at the right time and played for both. I also played for Bill Wamsconz. Do you recall that figure? You know who he is, Roger? And Zeke, do you know who Bill Wamsconz is?
Nope.
Okay, now that name is familiar, Bill Wanastead. Yeah.
Okay, they talk about it every year during the World Series. I give you a
yes,
clue.
They do, and you got me on that one right now.
Well, he's the only man to have made an unassisted triple play in a World Series.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he's always mentioned the World Series.
And
yeah, you're 100% right on that. And, well, yeah, you knew the trivia on that one. You know, Pepper, I want to continue with a thing. I have to ask you, do you remember the dimensions to your stadiums? Because one of my great points is that the players cannot play up to the standards of back then. Pepper, they're always bringing the fences in. They're smaller stadiums. And I'm not talking about people. I'm talking about the dimensions of the walls and the field.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I bet you could come into Dodger Stadium and still hit a home run. I bet you probably could.
I don't know about that, but I'll tell you what. If you got me up to bat with a runner on second, I'd get him home.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. But I have to ask, what was the dimension, if you could remember, of the of any of the stadiums that you were in?
Well, we played on regulation baseball fields. And some of them were also doubled as football fields. So they were distant fences that nobody could hit the ball over. On some of the fields, they put up temporary fences. And basically it was like 275 down one line and maybe 3 and a quarter, 350 down the other line. And well, then they would put up canvas fences on the football fields, because in those days, see, we played on the minor league stadiums, and they doubled for track sometimes and football and baseball, you know. So they were limited as to making it specific baseball.
Wow.
So
yeah, that is a great comment.
You know, speaking of that, like in Peoria, Illinois, they had up the canvas fences, and I think in Peoria it was like about the dimensions I told you about 3 1/4 and 350 down the left field and the right line, and maybe 375, 4 in center field. With the canvas fences, you
wow.
know, removable. And my buddy Faye Dancer could have played baseball with any man in the majors. I've never seen anybody yet, man or woman, that when the ball was hit, she played center field. When the ball was hit, she knew immediately where it was going. And she could turn her back, and how she knew, I don't know, but she would run to that spot where that ball was coming down, take it over her shoulder, spin in the air, and throw a long ball to home plate at the same time. And I've never seen anybody be able to take a ball like that and do what she could do.
Wow.
And so she was called all the way, as I said before, she was called all the way Faye by us, and they changed it to May in the movie. And they while we did get in a lot of trouble together, but you know what, stuff like stealing watermelons and getting buckshot at you?
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And actually, there's so much I could go into, Roger. We actually dated the mafia and didn't know it.
Yeah, that's right.
We were really very, very innocent. The things we got into were innocent things. But and compared to today, you know, it was cream pudding, I'll tell you.
I'm sorry, Zeke. I didn't mean to cut you off. I wanted to comment that in the chat room, MCSDKK says, after just hearing just a little bit of the interview, a great life, doing what you loved, happy now as then, a gift in giving us that movie. Penny needed you. What a great person, and you deserved all the persons you met. God bless. And that comes from MCSDKK in the chat room.
Thank you very much. That's very, very nice.
I've just been myself,
and that's all I've been for all these years. Is
being wow. Right now, I kid you not, I explained to you before we went on air that my significant other does not speak English, and yet she has been here for the last 40 minutes listening to it, listening to you when you sang the song. Wow. She was tapping her heart because she remembers
you know
the
what?
Movie, and she's still here right now. She is listening, and if she
you
could.
Where is she from, Roger?
Well, she is from just south of the border. She is from the frontier town of Tijuana, Mexico. And
okay,
she has been here since...
You know, I flew 40,000 miles down in South America in 1948. And I learned a beautiful South American song. And I call it South America because I'm trying to cover all of the countries we flew in. We were in Nicaragua, we were in Puerto Rico, we were in Venezuela, Guatemala. Anyway, and they were shooting at us, landing and coming and going. You want a revolution? They had one every day down there. But anyway,
yes, Banana Republic.
Yeah. And I was wondering if she knows it. Ask her if she knows La Última Noche.
La Última Noche, ¿la conoces? Sí. She, dilo.
Sí.
Were you able to hear her? She
yeah.
said, see.
Well, tell her one of the South American gals, we had some South American gals in our league, taught me the words to that in Spanish, and I wrote an English version of that. And it's a beautiful song. If anybody would have made it today that sings Spanish and American songs, you know, I'm sure it would have been a number one hit because it's a beautiful song.
Wow, she's just sitting here. Her eyes are sparkling, and she says yes.
La última noche que pasé contigo, que ser olvidada, pero no he podido. La última noche que posé contigo, tú muy elegante de Liban. Como recuerdo. I kind of forget the rest of it. I know it in English.
Wow, that is unreal. That is unreal. And I've got to tell you that there are more people entering the chat room to listen. Rocky Dennis Face is now in the chat room as well. And Pepper, what a treat. It is margarita time.
Absolutely. I was drinking tequila. I was drinking that cactus juice long before it got popular.
That is great. And Pepper, she's laughing. She's been here since 1992. So she does capture some meaning and some thoughts right here, but I've not translated everything. And you've been telling your stories, and she's reacting to it. So she is getting quite a bit of it. And I'm sorry, Pepper, for the hero worship, but we saw the movie. We know of you.
You were talking about the South America trip. Now, you had a decision to make between a man and the trip. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was engaged out here for 3 years, and I was supposed to get married for 3 years, and the last year I agreed to quit playing ball and get married and come back home in September after the playoffs, and they picked an all-star team to go to South America. And I said, well, wow, Norm, they picked an all-star team to go to South America. And I said, that's going to be great. He said, well, you're not going. And I said, well, yeah, I am. He said, well, what about your promise? And I said, adios. actually, he got tired of waiting, and I really don't blame him. And if it was meant to be, I figure I weighed that whole situation, and I knew I really must not have loved him the way I should, or I would not have wanted to go to South America. And I did, and I went. And I'm so glad. I've had a wonderful time down there. Met General Somoza and his family at the palace in Manila, Nicaragua. And there's a lot of history in the book. And reading the book, South America. We got in a little trouble down there, too, but we got home safe. Manila, Nicaragua is a wonderful place. Puerto Rico is a wonderful place. We went to Puerto Rico at San Jose, and the American submarine fleet was in the bay on maneuvers. Well, those boys hadn't seen American girls for a while, and we hadn't seen American boys, especially sailors. So actually, myself and Ina's voice, we called her the Big Hook, was our first baseman for Grand Rapids, Michigan. Me and the Big Hook got invited on a submarine, and I know it was totally, they'd have probably been court-martialed if it had been found out. They took us on board the submarine and submerged and circled all around the bay, and we had dinner on the sub with the guys. And those subs were so narrow at that time. I'm sure they're quite different now. You walk down the aisle, the guys were in their bunks, hanging into the aisles, flexing their muscles for us. It was great. They hadn't seen American girls for a while, and we hadn't seen American boys, and it was wonderful.
That's great.
So I can tell you I've been on a submarine.
No.
And submerged.
Really?
Yeah. Took us around the bay. I know that broke 1,000 rules. But you know what? Boy, they sure eat good. We had like corn on the cob and filet mignon and champagne.
Really? Well, I mean, what was that like, being in a submarine submerged?
It was scary. But the guys were all with it, and we were surrounded with them. So we just, you know, performed for the guys, you know, kidded them and sang for them and, you know, visited with them and tried to bring a little home back into their life. Not to mention, some of them were pretty cute.
Yeah. Well, you had some cute guys in each town that you went into, and the way you looked, because you looked like who? You looked like
I was told I looked like Ginger Rogers and Joan Bondell. I was compared to those in different stages of my life.
So there must
and
have been
I couldn't see it then, but I can see it now in some of the pictures.
Well, that's probably why you had so many guys coming after you on the road.
Well, I had a few. I had a few. At one time, you know, there were 10 teams in our league, 10 towns. So me and Tex and Faye, we had boyfriends in every town.
Yeah.
And you know what? It was gas rationing. So they couldn't really travel, except this one time when we got caught. But I have to tell you right up front that a relationship in those days was different than a relationship today. You didn't kiss the guy till about the third date. You didn't go steady with him till you brought him home to meet your folks. And you played by different. You saved the best for your husband, and I did. But I won't say I didn't steam up a lot of car windows.
Now, when you were playing, the teams you're on, what was your favorite team, and what were some of your favorite players?
Well, that's a real hard one. But overall, I guess I played the longest for Grand Rapids, Michigan, the Grand Rapids Chicks, and that would have been my favorite team because my buddies Tex Lessing and Alma Ziegler, which Gabby Ziegler was arguably maybe the best, one of the best players in our league. She was all-star second baseman all the time, and then she'd come on the mound and won 31 ball games on the mound. So we doubled up that way because if we had a full roster, it was 16 ball players. 16. Do you realize the majors carry 12 pitchers, you know? And we had 16 ball players. You could always count on somebody being hurt. So that usually cut you down to about 14. So, you know, if the pitcher was on the mound and she was getting knocked around, she'd probably go out to right field after taking a beating, and you'd bring the right fielder in to pitch. If you needed a pitcher, you know, and you'd go and pitch, you know, and if you needed a first baseman, somebody would go play first base. If you needed a second baseman, you'd substitute it and move over to that position, wherever you were needed the most. And if you needed somebody to push the bus, we'd push the bus. So there you go. That's why I say the guys today couldn't have made it. They couldn't have made it. That's the reason I wound up being a catcher. When I came into the league as a shortstop, and I was second leading hitter and first in RBIs and first in fielding percentage as a shortstop. Our catcher, Booker Foote. Well, you weren't going anywhere without a catcher, not in our league. And there was only one good one on every team. So I volunteered to get back behind the dish because I was of more help there, and we had a halfway decent gal that could play shortstop. So I went back behind the dish.
Yeah.
And that happened to me a couple of years in a row when the catchers got hurt, and I had a real strong arm and a talent for it. And basically, they needed me more behind that dish, and I wound up eventually loving it. But I started out wanting to play shortstop, and I was a good one. And as a matter of fact, the first year that I caught with a finger mitt because I could not handle a catcher's glove.
Oh, really?
Catcher's gloves in those days were like a big pillow with a hole in it, you know, a little teeny hole in it. You couldn't catch the ball one-handed. There were no big webbings or hinges. It was just like a big pillow with a hole in the middle. You needed to put both hands up there. So what you did was, you kept your fist closed, hopefully, but your hand would open when the ball was getting there, you know. So that's how you broke the fingers. There's no way you could put your hand behind your back. You needed both hands to handle the baseball. Well, I couldn't do it with a catcher's mitt the first year or two, so I caught with the finger mitt. But it was one of the things that made me a really good catcher because I could take the ball out of the dirt better than anybody because I was an infielder, you know.
Yeah, you were up there shortstop for fielding and offense, right?
Yes. offense and defense. I was right up there.
We have another caller. We had another caller. Dropped off. Okay, so we won't take that one. let's move on to currently. You're now, like, growing up and now, do you follow Major League Baseball? What are your favorite teams and players?
Well, I'm a Californian, so I'm rooting for the Angels and the Dodgers, and what a mess that is. But I love baseball. It's the greatest game in the world. Unfortunately, today, I don't love all the baseball players.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect example was the one that just got caught again, and the guy that took millions from Boston and millions from the Dodgers, and now he didn't even have the guts to suffer his punishment. And that kind of thing has kind of soured me a little bit. And the way they act, and the way they ignore the fan. And see, in my day, that was it. That fan was the one that made the game go.
Yeah.
And there is today no loyalty to the fans. And as a result, there's actually no loyalty by the fans. So there you go, you know.
Now,
traditionally, I'm a Dodger Angel and a Dodger rooter.
Oh, okay.
And I try very hard to root for them. I know Mike Socha. He's a great guy and a good manager.
And there's another person
I know Vin Scully.
I
had the pleasure of knowing Jim Chick Hearn. And just so lucky to know so many of the world's famous athletes that I do know. And
yeah,
you know what?
Really.
The old-timers, they really did appreciate us and what we went through.
Now, I think it was 88 you got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Excuse me?
Was it 1988 that you got inducted into the Hall of Fame?
11/5/88. That's tattooed right on my heart.
Oh, is that? That was exciting, huh?
Yeah. Growing up as a little girl playing baseball, I was always better than all of the boys around me. And they really hated that. And they would always get me in the end because they would always say, yeah, well, okay, but you can't be in the Hall of Fame. Girls can't be in the Hall of Fame. Hey, well, to all you guys out there, nanny, nanny, nanny. 11/5/88, I am in the Hall of Fame.
That's great.
That was wonderful for the Hall of Fame to do that.
Now, I was up there and saw a little bit of it. Is it like in the movie, you know? Is that what's there? What was in the movie?
Oh, they made it much bigger. But although the exhibit is good, it's a very nice exhibit. It includes a lot of things that I don't think necessarily earned their way there as we did. But
yeah.
As far as women go, you know? But that's life.
Now let's move on to the movie, A League of Their Own. You were a consultant.
I was on location with them for 3 months, yes.
Yeah, what did you do?
Among other things, I played Truth or Dare with the girls. But I made a promise not to tell my kids. I had a great time. I had a director's chair right next to Penny's.
Right.
And
she listened
to a lot I had to say.
Right. Told all your stories and how it really was. There was one young girl who was having trouble hitting, and you helped her out, right?
Yeah. One of them, there was more than one. There were two.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Well, actually, a lot of them that I helped out with their baseball as well as having somebody to relate to made them really feel like ball players. All the movie stars they were young gals in their formative years in those days. And Tracy Reiner, who played Betty Spaghetti in the movie, the
right.
one whose husband was killed,
Yeah.
That was Penny Marshall's daughter.
Yeah, that's the
and
one I was talking about.
Knew that.
That's the one I was talking about.
Yeah. Well, she was having trouble hitting, and I helped her out. But also Rosie O'Donnell. And Rosie O'Donnell was a really good ball player, but she was having trouble in the batting cage because she had her stance closed too much and she wasn't opening up. And so I just told her to open her stance up a little bit and leave the outside pitches alone and just wait for a ball over the plate. She started whacking the heck out of the ball. But we were taught by great baseball men.
Yeah.
We were taught baseball by Hall of Famers. There actually were three Hall of Famers in our league. Dave Bancroft, Max Carey, Jimmy Fox, and Bill Wamsconce. Was extremely well known. And then there was a great hockey player for the Chicago Black Sox, Johnny Gottschalk, was also a manager in our league. But they were all baseball men, hard-nosed baseball players. And so we were taught by the best.
Well, how true was the movie to what you experienced?
I can't hear you.
How true was the movie that you experienced in real life?
There was a good 80% of truth in the movie. What they had to do, Penny had to take a war, 12 years of baseball, 10 teams, and get that into 2 hours. So they, basically my life is spread all through the movie. Look, I had a girl writing the song, differently. Basically, I was the catcher. Basically, I'm the one that was traded, not the pitcher. I was traded. I was the catcher, and I was traded to Racine.
Yeah.
And it was my brother, not my sister, But they just kind of spread things around.
Gina Davis actually played like your part, right?
Yes.
As the catcher.
Yes.
And I think
Gina was 6'1" on her stocking feet.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, those legs weren't made for catching.
No. Madonna.
She had never played baseball or softball or anything.
Oh, really?
So I have to honestly tell you, I guess I can say it all these years later, she had a darn good double. But
yeah,
she
really
did a lot of the things herself. But
good.
She could not learn to be a complete ball player overnight. These girls were over 9 months making this movie. And by the time it was over, there was one scene in the movie, or the 4th of July scene where they won the pennant. And they filmed that at night, and they had me doing the announcing to the crowd. They had over 2,000 extras there at all times.
Yeah.
So they had me talking to the crowd. And it really took me back. They were shooting the fireworks and playing the game, Now, that game was, and they had the movie stars, which the movie stars were all on the Rockford Peaches, basically, most of them. And the Racine Belles then were outside of Lori Petty, were actually, they were players in from college, young girls that were good.
Oh, really?
Players.
Okay.
Yeah, and Gina had a great double. And
I think Madonna was
that movie.
I think Madonna was perfect for All the Way May.
Yeah. Yeah, and she did do that. She did that slide in the third base, that head first slide. Mo did that. Well, we called Rosie and Madonna became close friends, and we called them Mo and Ro.
Is that why they made them close friends as characters in the movie?
Excuse me?
Is that why they made them good friends in their characters in the movie?
I don't know. It, probably yes, because they became great friends on the movie, and they're still great friends.
And what about, what was Tom Hanks and Penny like, Penny Marshall?
Oh, they were great. Tom is a wonderful guy, takes his family everywhere. Funny guy, and a pretty doggone good ball player. And Penny, if you can understand her, she's hard to understand sometimes, the way she talks. But she was a great gal, and she listened to a lot I had to say. And I think you know, I didn't really realize it at the time, but now I'm very proud because I do know I had a lot to do with it being a good movie.
Yeah, I'm glad you're a consultant for it because at first they kind of were resistant to it, but then they were like, we have to let her consult.
Exactly. Exactly. Because they were forced into a couple of deals. That, there's a lot of politics in Hollywood. And they were forced into a couple of deals with technical advisors and all. And they had as their main technical advisor, one gal that was in the league 1 year, the last year of the league. Now, she couldn't really tell you that much about the league other than what she had heard from other people. And that wasn't her fault. And I don't mean to criticize, but how could you have somebody that was like a second-string catcher that played 1 year the last year of the league? How can that be your technical advisor?
Yeah, really.
You know? Anyway, so they were paying out money, and they had to pay, split it with another company, and Hollywood likes to save money.
No, save it and make it.
They resisted it, but you know what? When they started training for the movie, they trained at SC, and Ralph Dado was one of the coaches, the great SC baseball coach. Deborah Winger was going to play the catcher.
Oh, that's right.
And Deborah Winger, she worked out for 6 months, and she came to my house. I was in 2 days and showing films and talking to everybody, but for some reason she couldn't make it then, or I don't know why, but or maybe she wasn't cast yet. She came to my house, and she stayed for 3 hours at my house listening to me talk and looking at films.
Wow.
And she gave me this big hug when she left, and she said, "You got to be on that set. I'm going to see that you get on that set." So between her and Joey, who was one of the secretaries, eventually they got me on there as technical advisor.
Yeah.
And once they heard me talk and saw what I had to offer, then I had it made.
So you were pleased with the final movie when you saw it?
Oh, very definitely. There were. I got a couple of things changed that I was very happy that I was around to get them changed, because there was so false and never would have happened, you know, in our year and in our league, it never would have happened. I got those things pulled out of it and made them realize. There's just a great deal of me in the movie. It's spread all through the movie, my knowledge, and when you read my book, you will see.
Well, I have Dirt in the Skirt, your book. You signed it for me. Thank you very much. You sent me a lot of other stuff that you autographed, too. I want to thank you much for that. They can probably get your book from your website, right?
Yeah, if they check out my website.
Do you have that?
No, I think it's PepperPearDavis1@yahoo.com. Something like that.
Let me just check. I'll make it right.
Yeah. Why? You know more about it than me.
It's pepperpeardavis.com. And you can get her book through that site. And plus learn a lot more about her.
Incidentally, that's the only way you can get my book.
Yeah.
I self-published, which I kind of regret now because I'm in debt up to my neck.
Yeah.
And I have not landed any big. I do a lot of free things for Daughters of the American Revolution, historic societies, little leagues. I go, I sign free autographs, and then I sell my book to those who want it, and I have cards and T-shirts. It's all on my website, and but I have not been able to make any big contacts to. Like, if I could just get on one big television show, I'd be all set, you know? I know that I would.
Yeah.
And I know that I could make them realize that it was interesting because I get favorable comments wherever I speak.
Now, what was it like writing the book? Is that your first experience writing a book?
Yes. I told you I started out with the first. I went to Mexico when I was 12 years old on an all-star softball team, Guadalajara and Mexico City, by train. And I started writing the book then. I was going to high school, and I was like 12 to 14 years old. I actually was, maybe I was 14, but I was no older than that. And I called it From Hot Dogs to Hot Tamales. And that's when I started writing that book. But when I got into playing baseball, then I've written songs and poems and stories all my life. In fact, I was going to be a journalist. I was take an English major at UCLA and studying. I was going to be a journalist. I just didn't have time to do it. I always knew I was better than everybody else as far as writing songs are concerned, as far as writing poems. If I got in trouble in school because I didn't like to study, I was smart, but I didn't like to study, and I was playing softball three nights a week, I would just write the teacher a poem, and I'd get an A.
Wow. So
I always knew I was better than all the people around me, but just how good, who knows, you know? Well, my song's pretty popular, and I've written maybe 30 other songs. Hey, I could have some bestsellers. Who the heck knows?
You should make a CD, release the album.
I've been thinking about that. I wrote a road trip song. I wrote songs in the 40s. I wrote a song for Texas, my buddy, who was homesick for Texas. I wrote a road trip song. I wrote love songs. And I wrote one song called I Want You to Build an Igloo with Me on the FHA.
Yeah. Is one of trouble.
I wrote one for Sarah Palin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I wrote it in the 40s. Do you know what the FHA is?
No.
Federal Housing.
Oh, okay.
And President Roosevelt established Federal Housing Assistance, and that would help people to get a home, to buy a house. So I wrote, it's called An Igloo on the FHA. I have a proposition I'd like to present to you. It's not a supposition. It really is true. I want you to build an igloo with me on the FHA. We really can't marry on the cash and the carry, because, honey, money ain't hay. Now, I've no rice, I've just got ice, my sweet little Eskimo pie. So FHA is the only way. Come on and give it a try. Now, if you want a wedding, there won't be tough sledding. Let's give it a holiday, hey, and build it on the FHA. Something like that.
Something like that. You remember it pretty good. I'm looking through the book. I can't find it. There was some song about being on the road. Do you remember something like that?
There's so many. I wrote a road trip song. I don't know if that's in there.
There's one, say, I Come from Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, that's from Motrezza. Motrezza, our little rookie that we took to the cemetery, she taught me this song. I come from Brooklyn, and Brooklyn is out of this world. I come from Brooklyn, everyone there is hard-boiled. President Roosevelt thought it was great. He was going to make it the 49th state. I come from Brooklyn, and Brooklyn is out of this world.
I love how it's disboiled.
Yeah, well, that's the way she sang it. She was a great gal and a really fine ball player.
Yeah.
She was lived on 31 Orion Street, Brooklyn Avenue.
Now, I already know your opinion on this, but I got to let everyone else know. What do you think about the Colorado Silver Bullets, the women's baseball league that went around the country?
I thought it was a publicity stunt for Coors. And they were good ball players. Please don't misunderstand me. And I give them a lot of credit. But they were softball players in their late 20s and 30s, trying to convert to baseball.
Oh, no wonder.
And you cannot do that.
Yeah.
I explained to you the difference between us and them. And even though we were great, but a big girl in our league, say, one of them was, well, her name was Ginny Fout. She was maybe 5'10 and weighed 180 pounds. And not Ginny Fout, Faust. And she could run Faust, F-O-S-S. Let me get that right, because it was a Faust. Jeannie Faust, who was a great pitcher in our league and still around. But this was Faust. She could run like the wind, and she could club the ball right-handed or left-handed. She was 180 pounds, like I say, and maybe like 5'9 or 5'10. Now, that's a big woman. That's a little man. Physically, women cannot compete in a physical contact sport. And it has nothing to do with skill, and it has nothing to do with brains. It has to do with a physical disability. You would not put a flyweight in the ring with a heavyweight. And that's the way it goes, and that's the only reason women haven't made the majors. They do not have the physical dimensions to compete successfully in a physical contact sport.
Well, you know, if somebody was smart, they would teach a girl the knuckleball and be a pitcher.
Well, exactly. That's the only, like I told you, the only way somebody's going to make it is as a designated hitter or as a pitcher.
Maybe even a lefty specialist or something like that.
Yeah, and we had some, well, speaking of lefty specialists, one of our gals' name was Annabelle Lee. And are you familiar with Bill Lee?
Yes. Spaceman Lee.
Oh, Spaceman? I know Spaceman very well. He pitches two or three ball games in a single day yet. and his niece, or rather his aunt, was Annabelle Lee, who pitched with me in the 1945 Fort Wayne Daisies.
Oh, that's right.
Annabelle Lee
was
a knuckleballer.
Yeah.
She taught him to pitch.
Ah!
And she pitched a perfect ball game in 45, and I caught it. And that wasn't easy, not with a knuckler.
I bet. Oh, we learned something big right there. I found that We're on a Road Trip song.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you remember, or if, do you want me to say what the lines were?
We're on a road trip, a lovely road trip. We'll travel all night long. We lost our ball game. Ain't that a darn shame? We'll talk about what went wrong. Later on, we'll sing a song. It's tough to lose when you try so hard. Forget those booze. Come on, let's play cards. And yet, the memory lingers. Forget, but cross your fingers. Here comes another boneyard. There's a train. There's a bridge we're going under. Listen to the thunder. Whoops, here comes a train. The cows are laying down, so you know darn well it's going to rain. That one?
Yeah. I think, let's see, that the town is dead ahead, but we won't see the bed. A doubleheader's on the menu.
Yeah,
shake off the rust.
The town is dead ahead, but we won't see the bed. There's a doubleheader on the menu, so we'll get dressed. Come out and play, too.
Rumble, rumble, rumble.
Rumble, rumble, rumble. You know what? I can still hear those bus tires. Rumble, rumble, rumble.
Oh, is that what that is? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, rumble, some of the things... Rumble. Some of the things you have accomplished since then was the Women's National Adult Baseball Association, the legendary Ladies of Baseball. You held 68 speaking games for the WNABA in 94. Your board of directors for the Paralysis Project, an organization dedicated to wiping out spinal cord injuries. Enlisted by Australian government to promote women's baseball in Australia. First woman coach for World's Children's Baseball Fair. And you also have a starting lineup figurine released nationwide. They still have those?
There's a few more, but you got most of them.
Well, I mean, do you have any more of those starting lineup figurines?
Oh, no. They gave me a very limited few. And if you got one out there, anybody, hang on to it. They're kind of rare. I was supposed to get like 300 that I ordered and paid for.
Yeah.
They gave me 12.
Oh.
Because at that time, Mattel was going out of business. That was the last year, and they got taken over, you know, by Mattel? Oh, Mattel
right.
was there. They got taken over by somebody else. And they were going out of business, so they just made a short run of my dolls.
It's probably on eBay somewhere. Probably selling for a lot.
But I'm saying if you got one and you're a sports fan, hang on to it.
Yeah. What else have you been up to?
Excuse me?
What else have you been up to?
Oh, well, I speak all over the place for these little book clubs, and I go to softball tournaments and sign free autographs for the kids and their families. And still get a bunch of fan mail. Try to answer that. And I keep pretty busy. Between that and all the, I almost said a swear word. All the all the doctor's appointments that I got to go to keep the old body going, you know. I pretty much wrecked my body playing all those years. My legs are completely shot, my knees, and I'm not a candidate for surgery, so I can't do anything about that. I suffered a 50-foot fall in the 60s.
Wow.
And broke my back, crushed my back, three lower vertebrae in three different places. And
how'd that happen?
So I carry a back injury.
How did that happen?
Well, actually, I was going grunion hunting.
Oh.
That's in the movie. I mean, in the book. I was going grunion hunting, and I was going down this path, and the path collapsed. And I fell 50 feet, and I lit on a ledge above the rocks, which saved my life.
Yeah.
And but they couldn't get to me.
Well, the injuries you suffered during the playing the game, you would probably still do it all over again, wouldn't you?
In a hot minute.
Yeah.
In a hot minute.
For anybody who's interested, you can go to the www.aagpbl.org, and it tells you all about the league history, the rules of play, the league structure, league records, rules of conduct, charm school. And I'm reading some of these rules that you had to follow, and they're detailed.
Well, you know what? We had to live by those rules. That's why I'm telling you that the guys today couldn't do it.
Oh, no way. With all the stuff
gals,
they do?
We had to be, we couldn't wear jeans or shorts or slacks at any time in public. We had to be dressed in short and skirts and blouses and dresses. They couldn't, if they had to put their hair in curlers, they had to wear a babushka.
Yeah.
Which was like a handkerchief tied up in the top, and they used to call it a babushka. Thank God I had curly hair, because as a catcher, you know, I had like two showers a day at least, sometimes three, depending on how much practice we had. Which we had practice every day as well as a game every night, most of the time.
Now, as Madonna's character said, there is no smoking or drinking, right?
Right. Not in public.
Can't wear jewelry during game or practice, regardless of type. All living quarters and eating places must be approved by the chaperones. You can't leave or go out of the area.
It'd be in 2 hours after the ball game.
I just thought back to part in the book, a story about, I mean, some of the places you had to stay were pretty ratty. My favorite one was the one that you had to keep the light on in the room even when you were sleeping. Why was that?
Spring training, Opa-locka.
Why was that?
Because they were cockroach is big enough to push the Queen Mary around. And they could fly. Those things could fly.
Well, the
so
story...
If you turn that light off, the whirring and the buzzing and they started flying and the jumping.
You didn't know that when you went there. The light was on. You went out, turned the light out.
Yeah, and I've taught to turn the light out, you know?
You came
when
in.
When we come back, Texas says, who set that light off?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I did. She said, why? She said, I'd never turn that light off. I said, why not? She said, I'll show you. And she flipped the switch. And man, were they were flying and buzzing and thick in the air. So we never slept. That whole, you know, you don't go to sleep. We'd have the lights on and we'd go to the laundromat. There was only a couple of places, a couple of washing machines. Everybody had to use them. So we'd do the laundry at night, play cards. What you didn't? It was horrible. But I will have to say that Arthur Meyerhoff was Wrigley's right-hand man, attorney and right-hand man, and he arranged all that stuff.
Was that the guy in
the... He said they weren't cockroaches. They were. He called them something else. Well, baloney. They were cockroaches.
Yeah.
But that was the only really bad spring training I can remember.
Yeah. Well, the right-hand man, was that the guy in the movie with the glasses?
Yes. That was basic. The real guy was Arthur Meyerhoff.
Yeah. Well, we've gone, I don't know if you know this, but we've gone almost 2 hours.
Well, you know what? That's why the book's 50 chapters.
Yeah. We're only allowed 2 hours. We could keep going, but...
I could go for another two, and then I'd probably have to have a Colorado Kool-Aid.
Well, maybe sometime I'll contact you back, and maybe we can have you back on.
That would be my pleasure. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's taken me back a few years, and I hope the listeners enjoyed hearing me. I know I enjoyed talking to you, Zeke, and I enjoyed talking to Roger. And I really would like to meet Margarita sometime.
Well, if Roger's still on, yeah.
Oh, most definitely. We are here, and here's the thing. My wife is still sitting here, and when you said that, she laughed. She giggled. So she understood that, Pepper. She's been here for 90% of the interview, and her heart fluttered when you sang, and even more so when you sang again in Spanish. Wow, that was a thrill. And yes, again, I'll say it again. It's a hell of a hero worship that we're having over here.
Well, thank you. You make an old lady feel really good.
Well, you know, I've got to tell you, you've made us feel real good because we know the movie. It's a personal favorite. And the line, or not the line, but the line in the movie where Tom Hanks says, "Excuse me, sir, she's crying."
Well, you know,
he expects the umpire to say, "Yes, I know, Jimmy, shut her up," or whatever. It's out of order, whatever. But it's just incredibly amusing how it was so well played, and to know that is your line.
Well, what happened was when I told him about the gal being handed the telegram and playing, when I told him about my finger, when I in that final playoff series. I played 6 games with a frozen left ankle. They used a silver nitrate and froze my ankle because I sprained my ankle when I was behind the dish in the first game. And when I told them all those stories, they said to me, Babalu Mandel said to me, "How could you girls do that? Wouldn't you be crying?" And I said, "There was no crying in our baseball." And I said, "If you got hit with a pitched ball, If you even rubbed it on the way down to first base, here's what you would hear." And we were tough, and we had to be. You got to remember, our loved ones were over there fighting and dying. My brother's B-24 bomber was shot down in Okinawa, and we didn't know for 3 weeks whether he was dead or alive. And my fiancé was a nose gunner, and he was killed. And that story and many like that about the fellows are in the book. The pictures of the plane are in the book. It was a very dramatic time. And we did not cry. When we were there to keep the spirits of the people up. If we cried, how would that have done? So when we went home at night, laid our head down on the pillow, shut the light out, that's when we cried. And we had a cemetery right behind the house where 8 of us stayed in Fort Wayne. It was a cemetery. And sometimes Faye and I, her brother was also in the Air Force and in the Pacific. And we were so scared. In fact, her fiancé was killed also in Europe in the invasion in the Army. When we would go out to the cemetery and walk around, being very careful not to step on the graves, take a six-pack of beer, and talk. Just talk and try to relax. Because you couldn't do it. You had to put on this face, this brave face. When we played ball every night, we wound up in a V for victory formation. The home team down the third base line and the visiting team down the first base line. And that was a V for victory, and they played the Star Spangled Banner. And you took your hat off and put it over your heart. And you said your prayers and asked him to bring your loved ones back home safe. And then when I got to the end of that, I would always say, and of course, God, if you want to let me get a base hit, that'd be okay. But it was a dramatic time. A very dramatic time.
And the part in the movie about the, I think it was the catcher getting the information that her husband was dead or boyfriend was dead, is true?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a good 80% of truth in the movie. It's just manipulated, moved around, and condensed, and the names changed. And that's to save time and money, and that's Hollywood.
Well, the other thing was Penny said we have to kind of bunch the 10 years into one, right?
That's right. She had to take, it's 12 years, actually.
Oh, 12 years.
Existed.
That's right.
And 10 teams, and a war. And you had to get all of that into 2 hours. So they really kind of let you think it only went 1 year in the movie. It was so, I'm telling you, that was so open and still is to another movie being made, you know?
Read
my book. Look at the material.
Yeah, I know.
And if the people loved the first movie, they would completely love living through some of those years with the rest of it.
Well. I have to ask you, Pepper, before we run out of time, there's also another very important moment in that movie, one that has hit home with me and my family, and one that even I've, dare I say, stolen as a quote, and that's where Gina Davis is speaking to Tom Hanks, and the whole issue of she wanting to leave, you know, with the conflict with her sister and all, and
that's
she says...
That's my favorite line in the movie, too, and I did not write that one.
Okay. All right. Well, but that's cool. I understand that you may not have done so, but how much was that reflective of maybe for you and for everyone else where she says, well, it just got too hard, and then Tim Hanks answers, well, that's why we play, because not everyone can play. And that is almost reminiscent, even though this was long before, it's almost reminiscent to what John F. Kennedy said in 1961.
You didn't get it quite right.
That's right.
I didn't get it right.
She says, it just got too hard, and he said, it's supposed to be hard.
Yes.
If it was easy, anybody could do it.
And you're 100% right. John F. Kennedy, and that's what I was alluding to, John F. Kennedy said, why do we do the things that we do? Because they're hard, not because they're easy. And it's almost the exact same. Could you give us some insight? I know you were just there to help out in the movie, but who came up with that? Because that is a major moment in that movie.
The writers come up with that. I don't know whether it was Babalu or but they came up with that one.
Yeah, it's good to know. I do appreciate that. And I just translated for my wife, and she's just nodded. She's like, yep. That's right. It is one of the big moments. But anyway, we have about 5 minutes left. I just want to thank you again on behalf of my family, NDB Media. I mean, Margarita's still here, and she's smiling. She had a chance to speak with you. And yes, Pepper, if it's at all possible, we would love love the opportunity to meet you in person. And who knows? Maybe
well,
that'll happen very soon.
Tell her, drop me a line, and I'll send a baseball card and a photo or something to you guys.
Well, we will definitely. And it's really amazing, Pepper. We really are maybe 30 miles apart. And I have friends and family
in
Van Nuys.
I thought you were in New York with Zeke.
No. He's in New York. I'm right here in Downey right now. And that's why I'm not kidding you. We're about 30 miles away.
I'm going to be in New York. I do the Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital every year in January.
Wow.
And,
so there it is.
Possibly September. So tell Zeke to get me on David Letterman. I've always wanted to go one-on-one with him.
I'll try and get it done.
Then maybe I could sell some books and get out of debt. What the hell?
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, that's what we want to do. We want to remind everyone, head on over to Pepper, Pear Davis. The link is in the chat room. We're going to go ahead and put it in there again. Check it out. I know I'm going to be buying the book. And when it goes to your website, you'll know when I will, because you'll recognize the address, as I told you.
If you enjoyed talking to me, you'll love the book, Roger.
Oh, we've enjoyed it. I have to get the book, and I will translate it to my wife as
they've
I read
telling
it.
They've been telling me I should do a talking book. And tell Margarita if my Spanish wasn't so limited, I'd do it in Spanish for her.
Oh, my goodness. Yep, she got it right here, and she's all smiles. I mean, she's grinning like a little kid in a candy store. It's been a pleasure for us. Zeke, like I said, we only have maybe about 3 minutes. Why don't you go and finish it up for us? And for everyone in the chat room, wow, how beautiful. What a thrill. They're just they're commenting away in the chat room. So, all right, Zeke, I hand it on over to you, and I want to thank you again. We're out for now.
Great talking to you, Roger, and you and your wife. And tell her I love margaritas.
Oh, yes.
Laker fan in the chat room says, a true legend on the show. You still there, Pepper?
Are we still here, Zeke?
Yeah, I was just saying, the Laker fan in the chat room said, a true legend on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And I guess with 2 minutes left, yeah, that we can hang up and say goodbye.
Thing I want to do is say thank you to all of the fans out there that have remembered us. And the movie was out a long time ago, and thanks for still remembering me.
I'll give you a call pretty soon, too, okay? So we can talk some more?
All right, Zeke.
Okay. Bye-bye, Pepper.
Bye-bye, honey.
Well, that had to be the best show I've done. 2 hours of just, it was great listening.
Far and away, Zeke. Far and away. What a thrill. I just can't get over it. Well done. I kid you not, my wife is still here. We are both listening. I thank her, as I did profusely, and I thank you too, Zeke, because without you, this wouldn't have happened. Man, I love you, dude. You know that, and you made it for us. Wow.
I'm going to play us out the way I played us in.
You do it.
Take Me Out to the Ball Game, sung by Edward Meeker, Edison Rancor. Casey was baseball mad, had the fever and had it bad, just to root for the hometown through every Sioux, Casey Blue. On a Saturday, her young beau called to see if she'd like to go to see a show, but Miss Kate said no. I'll tell you what you can do. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and cracker jacks. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Well, good show and good night.